Mr. Lawson, allele 5.
It became pretty obvious to the Japanese that it was rather a waste of time moving us from the 20 odd miles from Changi down to Singapore to the dock area to do the work that they were giving us to do. So they found us camps in Singapore, and I went to a place called River Valley Camp. This was an accumulation of huts, bamboo made huts with what they call atap. It's dried palm leaves or something like that. That was the roof, and we just slept on bamboo. But River Valley was a pretty dreadful place when we first went there. There was a putrid stream that ran through it. And the one thing that used to disrupt your sleep was the very loud croaking of frogs. We cleaned this place up and we made it reasonable to live in, and every day we used to go off down to do various things for the Japanese. We used to, as I say, one was a cement job, which everybody wanted to get on once they knew about all this tin stuff. But again, an example of comradeship. Blokes who didn't go on jobs where there wasn't anything rather than to steal, we shared it with them when we got back. You know, in tins of beans, fish, fruit. We used to share it down with the lads. Everybody was looked after.
How many were there in this camp?
Oh, I really don't know. Probably about 500. If you know, that's just a number off the top of my head. I really don't know. But there's what at night time. We used to sit around and talk about the old days and about England, and we used to, and then there was a concert party that was set up, and we used to have concert parties. There was people who went round the huts and gave lectures, and one I remember very, very well was a well-known cricket correspondent called Swanton, E.W. Swanton, who died just a few years ago. He was a major in an artillery company, and whenever he was giving a talk, the place was absolutely packed, and people were hanging on the rafters to listen to him. He really was. This sort of thing was a great help to us to take our minds, help to take our minds off. But again, it's a matter of, you know, you always find something to do that's good. That helps you along. It's a matter of survival. And the concert parties were great. You know, folks used to get dressed up as girls and they used to have these concert parties. It was amazing, you know, the things that people could think of, you know, making guitars out of wood and all sorts of things. It was amazing. But that wasn't too bad at River Valley eventually.
How were you being treated this time by the Japanese?
Not too bad at all, really. They didn't. They had these roll calls from time to time, but as long as there was nobody missing, and as long as we were doing the jobs that the manual work that they wanted us to do, it wasn't too bad. See, I'm comparing this now with hindsight, thinking of what was going to happen. Later on. So I would say that the best part of the best early part of my time on Singapore was obviously at Roberts Barracks. And I would say secondly came River Valley. And then we were sent back to Roberts Barracks actually. And I wasn't too well at that time. I got a very bad dose of dysentery and had to go into part of the barracks that was allocated for as a hospital. Well, it was pretty basic. I mean, you would normally go into hospital for treatment, but there was no treatment, or very, very little. Malaria, quinine for malaria was only given to the ones that were really, really seriously ill. Dysentery, you more or less had to just pass the bug out of you in time.
Were there many people ill?
Oh, yes, yes. The longer time went on, the more the people became ill. As I say, malaria and dysentery were the two main illnesses. And then we were sprung on us. Oh, before I go on from there, one other little pleasing experience. When we were at Robert Panics, there was a cricket pitch near, and we had various cricket teams. We used to play each other and used to enjoy them. It's one of the first times that I've ever done well at bowling. I remember I'd taken about four or five wickets in one inning. But it's just another indication that you always found something to occupy your mind. And then we were told that we were going to go to a land of milk and honey. We were going to be moved up through Malaya, and we were going to camps where the food was good, the accommodation was good, everything was much, much better than what it was in Singapore. We had our doubts about that when we were herded into steel trucks, enclosed steel trucks. Something like 30 to 40 people in the truck, 30 to 40 men in the truck. So crowded that you all couldn't lie down at the same time. We had to take turns. Some stood at one end while the others laid down, and you changed over. Toilet facilities were nil. The train would stop perhaps three or four times a day, and you would get out and do what you had to do. And of course, cook our meals, you know, our cooks were given rice and very little else. But when the train was moving, and when you appreciated most of these men had dysentery, when the train was moving, what you had to do, hold the man's hand while his backside was outside the carriage. I thought this was one of the worst experiences up to that time that I ever had in my life. However, we survived. We arrived.
How long did that journey take?
I'm not quite sure. We arrived there after about three or four days. And also remember on the with these steel, metal trucks, they were enclosed and the heat was absolutely nearly unbearable. And we arrived at a place called Ban Pong, and we knew that then we were in Thailand. And we were marched to a camp. And the memory then of, in detail of what happened is, my memory is very, very bad on this one. I know we went to another camp from Ban Pong, we went to another camp, and eventually I was in a camp near a place called Tanchanaburi, which is still a town. There's a big cemetery there now. And Bang Pong was the southernmost camp of the railway, and as I say, we moved from there to this this camp near Kanchanaburi, and eventually to Chiang Kai. Chiang Kai event was one of the largest camps on the railway. It it eventually became really a repatriation camp to where men were brought back from the railway who were too sick to work. Mind you, had to be sick, you had to be almost dying. But never mind, that's what Chiang Kai became. And there is now a large cemetery at Chiang Kai. And there's one at Kanchanaburi, of course. But
do you remember anything about these camps? Anything stick in your mind about them?
I'm afraid that the memories I have of these camps are not pleasant at all. They were all they were places where you slept, and you got up, and you ate what was given, and you walked to the railway, and you worked anything up to 12 hours a day with two rests, working through virgin jungle, cutting the trees down. We had no implements as such, except just the basic tools. I had no electric saws or anything like that. Everything had to be hacked down. And they used to be brought up to us the ballast for the railway. Sleepers were laid on it, sleepers that we had fashioned out of the trees that we cut down. And the railway lines were brought, and we put the railway lines on the sleepers. that was going on right up to the borders of Siam and Burma. They were working from the other end, of course, as well. That was what that went on day after day after day. No respite. The food was starvation diet. We all very quickly lost an awful lot of weight, until eventually you perhaps weighed about 7-8 stone. Still had to go to work. Our treatment was brutal. Even though you were doing the job that you were told you had to do, just wasn't good enough, and you were, Without warning, you would get a Japanese coming along and hitting you about the body with sticks. And some men were almost beaten to death. I can't really put into words strong enough to describe the treatment that we received under the Japanese. Again, there's always one or two incidents that stick out in your mind. And I remember we went up to a camp. And when you went up to a camp, you didn't ride on a railway, you had to walk. We marched. And I went into a camp Wampo, that's W-A-M-P-O, Wampo. The Wampo camp was mainly there to build a railway on trestles round a cliff top, round a cliff. because we dynamited certain areas through rock, but this was more or less, wasn't a mountain, it was a hill, big hill. So the railway went round this, it was a two-tier timbered, right on the banks of the river. And we worked there 24 round trip, 12 hours on and 12 hours off. In fact, at times it got to something like 14 hours on and 10 hours off. Working through the night with arc lamps. And this incident, well, there were two incidents really. We had elephants at that time with our Thai mahouts who were helping, who were bringing the big logs and big trees that we couldn't carry. But normally we would, perhaps about 14, 16 men would have a pole underneath the log, and you would lift it all together and you would transport it that way. So virtually everything was done by hand. But there were some elephants that did help in transporting these or moving these big trees. One day, a Japanese, I don't know what rank he was, but he started to torment one of these elephants. And elephants were rather placid animals. But he was tormenting it in such a way that, see, the Thai mahout, elephants have only have one man. You can't just put another man on an elephant's back and it'll do the work. You one man, one elephant. And the Thai who owned the elephant just couldn't do anything about this. I mean, just had to watch his elephant being tortured and tormented by this Japanese. The elephant must have got fed up with this, picked him up by the trunk, slammed him on the ground, and stood on him, to large cheers from our lads. The other incident happened during the night. There was this Japanese who was on the top of the structure. And he was shouting abuse at us working down below and throwing stones and all that. And some other Jap soldier wanted some equipment or up where this little fellow was. One of our lads climbed up, walked along. This was going to be the railway that he was standing on. Walked along and came to this Japanese soldier who was hurling abuse and stones at us. I had to get past him. Now, the man must have been an absolute idiot, because it was at night, and the lights that we had were only spaced apart. So you had a dark area, light area, dark area, light area. He allowed our lad to go behind him. And just by chance, the lad just gave him a little nudge, and he fell off the top. Fell about, 40, 50 feet on the rocks. Again, to large cheers from our lads. But those were incidents that happened. That camp was really one of the worst ones that I was in, from a work point of view. And then we had to, after we'd finished that particular piece of work, we had to move on to the next camp. And I said that Wampo was one of the worst. I think the next one was the worst. Now, I can't name this camp. I just don't know what they called it. But it was right on the river, and there was absolutely nothing there at all. no hoods, nothing. Fortunately, we were still, Derek Ward and I were still able to be, we were still together all this time, fortunately. And he and I, I don't know how we managed to salvage this, but we had an old army gas cape, and we rigged this up and made it into a shelter that we sheltered under, because the monsoon had started, and you were up to your knees in mud half the time, but you still had to go to work. There's still work to be done on the railway. The worst thing about that place was that with the monsoons comes cholera. And cholera is waterborne, and being right on the river, and once cholera hits a camp, it was devastating. A man can die in a matter of hours. His body, because of the loss of fluids through every orifice in his body, could reduce him to weighing something like 4 stone in a matter of 24 hours. And there were obviously a lot of deaths in that camp. At the time when I was there, the average number of people that died per day were about 30. And of course, then the Japanese were dead scared of this, of course, obviously. They shouted their orders from afar. We didn't get beaten as much, because they wouldn't come near us. But obviously the bodies had to be disposed of. And there was a certain number of our lads who were made into parties to dispose of the bodies. You're in two parties. One party used to go out and cut the bamboo after digging a big hole, and a large hole, something like 6 foot deep and perhaps 10 yards by 15 yards. Yeah. And this was going to be the funeral pyre. And the lads were going to chop the bamboo, bring it in, lay it in this hole. And another party would bring the dead from the area where all the cholera patients were sent to. Laid them on the bamboo and fired them. The bodies were brought in sacks, rice sacks. And it was one of the most frightening things that I've ever seen, because I didn't know what I was expecting. I was on this party that was cutting the bamboo, and we'd laid, this was the very first time I saw this, we'd laid these bodies on the bamboo, and they were set alight. And we were standing just watching the flames and the bodies being burned. And absolutely frightened me, because you saw the body sitting up. And I realised that afterwards that it was the heat tightening tightening your joints, tightening the ligaments and other sort of, and making them sit up. And I yelled out, I said, "My God, he's alive. And then I realised just exactly what was happening. Another incident that happened in that camp, we had to boil or sterilise all our mess tins. We all had a mess tin, and we all had a spoon or fork or something like this to eat our food with. Everything had to be boiled to try and contain the cholera. So before you went you're in queues going up to the serving area, and before you got there was a petrol cans, the large army petrol cans, filled with water, boiling water, continually boiling water, and you plunged your equipment into there. Now then, at the end of the meal, everything in the cookhouse had to be sterilised and washed. The only place to wash them was in the river. And I was down there one night. I was down by the river helping to wash these cans out that had contained the rice. And the bank was reasonably steep and slippy. And I slipped down into the water. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get cholera because I was in the river. Fortunately, I didn't. But it was a rather frightening experience. At that time, I think I was just about at my lowest point. Derek had got a disease called pellagra, which is a skin disease, which it's a vitamin deficiency skin disease, which dries the skin. And it just, the skin just dries out, the fluids, so you can't get, the fluids are not allowed out, you can't sweat, and eventually it kills you. And at that time, they were asking for volunteers to go into a Japanese cookhouse. They wanted four people. And I said to Derek, look, I don't want to leave you, but I've been offered the chance of volunteering to go into this Japanese cookhouse. And he said, you go. He said, it's no good staying here. You can't do anything more. You want to get out of this. He couldn't be one of them because he was too ill. And I left there with these other three chumps and went into a Japanese camp to work in that cookhouse. I never saw Derek Ward again. The next thing I heard about him was quite some time later, and I found that he'd been moved back to Chiang Kai, and he died in Chiang Kai, and is now buried in Chiang Kai Cemetery. This Japanese camp, there were no Englishmen, no prisoners of war there. The workers were Indians or Malays, and Malays. And they were in an awful worse state than what we were. Their dead were just lying about all over the place. The Japanese that we were cooking for were engineers. Now, the Japanese engineers are not too bad. I shouldn't use the word too bad. They weren't too bad in comparison to the Koreans, who were our guards. And we looked after pretty well there. We ate the same as they ate. Best food that I'd ever had for months and months and months. And of course, we built ourselves up. We were allowed to eat as much as we wanted. And exactly what the Japanese ate.
What sort of things were you eating at this time?
Oh, well, I mean, they had all manner of vegetables there, but meat was the main thing. You know, they'd have all sorts of, cattle, beef, no sheep, but never mind. There was always eggs, was another great source of food. I reckon that particular period went a long way to saving me.
What sort of state were you in when you arrived at that camp?
When I arrived, I was... well, I don't know. It's I don't know about weight, but I was emaciated. Putting a guess on that, I probably weighed about 7 stone. But you soon, with all the food that was there, with the food that we ate, we soon built ourselves up. And, of course, we had to chop wood, we had to do manual work as well. So with our bodies being built up, we we got ourselves in fair nick. There was one incident in that camp where every so often there was the Japanese have some sort of celebration for some particular day or something, I don't know what, but they would say, look, no work today, Japanese celebrate. And they went off, the cook went off, cook and his assistant went off to enjoy himself with the lads, and he came back expecting, which he'd never told us, expecting a meal for his for the Japanese in the Japanese camp. Of course, there wasn't any. We didn't know what he wanted. He'd never told us, but that made no difference. He lined us up, the four of us, and he belted all of us. And there's one staggered back. The other one was hit the knee, staggered back, and you came forward, and he went on. Eventually, he stopped. He was happy.